Hello and welcome to All Villa No Filler, a podcast all about Aston Villa, the world's greatest football team. Villa made it 3 wins in 3 with a victory at Luton Town, though once again it was a nervy affair. Today I'm joined by a regular guest on the show, friend of the show, Paul Webb himself from the London Lions. I didn't see the game. I was at a wedding in Ireland with Lydia and Joe, my cousin Christy as well, a massive Villa fan as well. So lovely to see that. Fantastic wedding. But Webbo, you were at the game. You did see it in person.
Yeah.
What did you make of it?
Yeah, well, nice to speak to you again, Frankie. Yeah, it was a really, really great day out. So sometimes when the game moves to 5:30, it's an absolute killer. But Luton away, when you live in London, at 5:30 was just absolutely perfect. Still home at a reasonable hour. Everything about the day was superb. So I'm quite a old school traditionalist football fan. So I love quirky stadiums. And I think that's probably the most generous word to describe Kenilworth Road, is that it is very quirky. It is unique beyond a shadow of a doubt. So just get into the ground, being excited about seeing the away entrance, as we've all seen it across social media, and just taking it back to a proper throwback, a proper stadium, and it felt intimidating. Everything about it was just really old school, like really non-league style, but really good atmosphere. All the Villa fans that were there seemed like they were in really good spirits. Probably a few of them would have been the first time at Luton. Obviously, the 5:30 kickoff probably led to quite a few people having a good day out, almost similar to yourself at the wedding. So before the game, and obviously we've won a few games on the bounce, as you mentioned, so spirits were genuinely really high, and the atmosphere, because it's such a small stand, the atmosphere was just cracking throughout. Like a lot of these new bowl type stadiums, you lose atmosphere, whereas that is just not the case at Kenilworth Road. From the start to the finish, not just Villa fans, but their fans, it was a really, really enjoyable game as a old school football fan as myself. And then the actual game itself was almost a repeat of what we've seen in the last few games, where we start games comfortably, so I ease our way into games, and then just start creating chances for fun. So that the chemistry now with the team is just a joy to watch at times. I think having a standalone player in Ollie Watkins, who, if fit, starts every single game, that comes with negatives, that it becomes too one way and it's not enough competition. But it has just led to the team knowing exactly the movements of Watkins. The likes of Louise, Tielemans now, Bailey, McGinn, they all just seem so gelled. And what is really exciting, Frankie, is that we are able to create opportunity after opportunity in various different ways. You look, the goals are very different to each other. Quite a strange goal, our first one. I can't remember the last time we just scored direct from a corner. That wasn't a weird Nanny McPhee special. And it was just a straightforward cross. It doesn't feel like a Villa goal that we've seen recently. Obviously, take it, fantastic. And then the second goal, really quick thinking, great first touch and great finish. Yeah. But we are just creating chances, Frankie, that from all different angles. We just look like a team that can score at any minute. But we are 3 wins on the bounce, 3 games in a row, we've been at least 2-0 up. 3 games, we have made it really, really hard work for ourselves, Frankie.
So obviously I didn't see the game, and I was like you when I saw the highlights and saw Watkins's goal. I thought, hold on, that's not what I was expecting. Just a corner. But then some of the chances in those highlights that he had, that he sort of created for himself, and then the second goal he scored, that ball from Louise, and then his touch and move. Watkins just looks like he's an absolutely elite player now, doesn't he? If you look at his numbers, he's comparable to pretty much anyone in Europe. And could you have imagined that he would become... You know, I thought it was the right decision when we sold Ings a year ago and made him the main man. But could you have ever imagined he would hit this level? Like, he feels like a world-class player now.
So there's a bit of stick I get is because I've always loved Ollie Watkins.
I've seen it.
I absolutely loved him. I called him...
This is your moment to shine. This is your moment. You take this.
This is just like, I've been saying this for 3 years. Like, in my head, this is how he's been playing for the last few years. You can only imagine what I'm seeing now, the levels that I've taken him to. Yeah. But when we signed him, I talked about I think it may have been on here, but I talk about it being like a franchise quarterback signing,
Yeah.
that you sign a player that you are basing your team around for the next 5, 6 years, which is what they do in the NFL. And that's what we've got now. He is fit. He stays fit so regularly, touch wood. That has obviously been a big curse this season. But he is a sort of a streaky player that he goes through these runs where he scores and he looks sensational and he does go off the boil. Probably a lot of strikers are like that.
Yeah.
But what I just love about the guy is that he never stops running. He never stops demanding the ball and wanting the ball. He's the bravery he always shows in wanting to be involved in every single game. And he can run at players. He's starting to add even more assists to a game. His statistics this season are just insane. So,
Yeah.
like, you talk about Arsenal wanting a striker. And then, like, people think, oh, they could come in for Watkins. I mean, how much would he be worth now if we were to sell him? He's recently signed a new contract. Looks like we're certainly going to be in Europe again next season. Which competition? We obviously know which one we want to be in. It's going to take so much to get rid of, and he's just been fantastic. He's a joy to watch. He seems like everything he does off the field seems like he's a really nice person as well. Gets involved in a lot of the charity stuff. So he's just a credit to the club. And it's so nice to like watch Match of the Day and hear the likes of Alan Shearer saying he is not only on the plane, but he's fully boarded. He's beginning to push Kane for a starting position, which I think is probably a stretch too far because of how good Harry Kane is. But from an English perspective, if Kane was to have an off game, why I'm fully confident that we've got a very, very, very good understudy who can come in and cause damage at that level as well. So, yeah, it's just exciting to have probably the most informed striker in the league at Villa because I can't remember the last time that happened.
Been a very, very long time since it happened, hasn't it? I've been like you. I've always felt that, the Danny Ings signing I thought was a confusing one. I thought at the time it was an odd one because it felt like the year before it'd been Watkins's introduction to the Premier League. He'd had a very solid start within the Premier League, and it was like, right, make him the main man and build around that. Then instead we signed Ings, and it was a very confusing year and a half. Emery was one who came in and said, Watkins is the man, and he's just been proven absolutely right, hasn't he? Yeah, I mean, with Villa, so like we mentioned, it seems to be in the last three games against Fulham, Forest, and Luton, we've had very fast starts. We've taken the lead. We seem to create over and over again, and we just look almost unstoppable in those first 40 minutes or so. But there keeps being something about us, and I'm a bit like, I sort of fear that if we concede a goal, it might go a bit awry, and it tends to have been what's happened, and I don't exactly know what that is or why that's happening. Do you have any theories yourself as to what, against Luton, for instance, what led to
Well,
Luton coming back?
so they sort of changed it up at half time. So you've got to give credit to these teams that when they're 2-0 down, they're not giving up. So for Fulham, Forest, so you've got to give a little bit of credit there. But from a Villa perspective, in that second half against Luton, we created, I think, one chance when Watkins had a chance when it was 2-0. And then for about 35 minutes, just didn't look like we were going to create. So the mindset changed. So it's obviously you. So obviously, it looked like we'd gone from a team on the front foot trying to impose ourselves on the game to a team sitting back to counter attack, which makes sense, right? Because they're going to come at us. So when we've been 2-0 up, the other teams have to be forced to come out of their shell. And the idea would be then, well, then we can pick them off when we win the ball back. And it's going to be that's when the space is. So there's a mindset change in that, which on paper sounds absolutely fine because well, that's a logical way of playing. Let's sit back a little bit more, let's control the game, but defensively. But it feels like if we're not going for it and attacking, we're a lot weaker defensively. So actually, when we try to become more defensive, we just allow teams to come on us. And for whatever reason, we're letting in silly goals now because the two goals against Luton came from a set piece again. And I don't know what the reason is that we haven't been able to improve our set pieces over the last three or four games because it doesn't seem to me. I look back to the Man United game when there was two or three corners before Harry Maguire set up Rasmus Højlund to score, where the same thing was happening. So
I
it's just a
agree,
simple cross to the big man. Now, if an opposition like Villa try and do create something really unique and undo us from a set piece. Sometimes you just got to say fair play. That's absolutely fine. But it feels like at the minute, if you put in a good cross to your biggest man on the field, they will win the header. And that for
Yeah.
me has gone on now for three or four games, and we're not changing that. And that's not something in a game that should be changed. That's something that should be sorted out before a game. That should be something that we should be able to stop. And when you're letting opposition score simple enough goals, right now, if you're, say, looking ahead, Ajax, for example, how do you target Villa? Well, go and get a corner, get a set piece in the set in their half, put in a good cross, and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Like, they will target two or three. Then I know Ajax play three at the back, so they'll have some tall players coming forward. That will be the easiest way to target Villa at the moment, and they can work on that. Teams, we are allowing teams too many easy chances back into a game. So I think there's something that needs to be done. I'm not sure. It could be in, like, maybe when we sit back previously and we've been ahead in games, because I think to the start of the season, until we lost at Man United, if we'd gone ahead, we'd won every game. So there's still,
Yeah.
we've obviously, not much has changed. We're starting games well, we're going ahead, and we're still winning these games, which is great. But there is an alarm bell ringing, is that we can't keep giving Forest two goals, Luton two goals, Fulham, we gave them a goal. That we were comfortable in that game,
Yeah.
because we're now coming up to a level above. So Ajax will be a level above to what we've played in the last few weeks. Spurs at home will be probably even a further level above. We've
Yeah.
got Arsenal still to play, Man City, Liverpool still to play. Give those teams a goal, Frankie, and you've lost the game. It's as simple as that. So I don't know if it's the Kamara absence that maybe when we've done it previously, gone ahead and we've allowed to sit back. Maybe Kamara's been more of a linchpin than Dougie Louise and McGinn are in that role, and maybe we're just a little bit weaker in that position. But I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just a little bit of complacency in the mindset, a lack of leadership across that back four, which we've probably been missing with the amount of injuries we've had out. But it's really positive that we're going ahead in games, but that
Yeah.
won't always be the case. So I think we just need to stop, sort out our set pieces, and just stop allowing easy ways to get back into a game. Because, like I said, the atmosphere was good at Luton, but as soon as they scored one, we physically went into our shell. We were scared. Didn't know how to get the ball out. Didn't control the ball at all. But then when it went 2-2, it was almost like, oh right, well, we changed again. So it was all mentality, it felt like, at that point. So feels like we've certainly got the right coaches and all that in place. But I think if you stop that winning of the corner, winning of that first header, that is the bit that I would be focusing so much on. From a set piece, win that first header. And then I think it just changes the mindset. We haven't been able to kill a game. If you've just taken the sting out of this game on Saturday, you win 2-0 and it's quite comfortable. But
Yeah.
yeah, so hopefully it's one that they can change on the training ground.
Yeah, 100%. And it's also one of them where you think, like the Mings absence all season, is that a profile of player that we're really missing in these just those situations? I do think of a parallel universe where Mings never got injured and think where he would have operated this season and the sort of goals he might have
Yeah,
prevented.
it's an interesting one. So I think for me, the injuries alone affected every team. I think it's
Yeah,
the
they have to, yeah.
constant changing across the back four, which I think will be leading to it. So, for example, we had a different back four again this weekend, with
Yeah.
Cons coming back in for Pau Torres, and Chambers played a little bit against it. So we're probably just not having it. And then obviously Kamara's going out. So it's just that. When we talked about it earlier, I talked about how good that chemistry has been at the top, because Watkins is there all the time, because Dougie Louise is there all the time. Yuri Tielemans has come in and played quite a few games now, but McGinn's there all the time. Bailey's pretty much there all the time. You've got consistency in those key roles. So I know they sometimes switch between who's playing in which exact role, but there's a lot more consistency in our personnel up top than there has been across the back four. So I think it's that consistent approach. Longley's been asked to play left side and then right side. And I do actually think he deserves quite a lot of credit for,
I
because
agree with that,
he
yeah.
was a fifth choice centre back. I was actually speaking to the guys at about the 60th minute, when it was still 2-0, saying actually he could be man of the match today. And then within 10 minutes, we conceded two goals, and saw that conversation went out the window. But he's really stepped up to be a solid squad player. He's probably
Yeah.
played more games than we all want, but I just think it's that lack of consistency in the back four. And when you look at the next four games before the international break, when we talk about rotation, it's across the back four that I imagine the most changes will happen over the next four games.
Yeah, almost certainly. And but like as I say, Luton this season, a lot of the big teams have gone there. Arsenal only just won in the 97th minute after a ding-dong game that ended 4-3. Liverpool got I think an equalizer in the very last minute of injury time through Luis Diaz. Man City, I think, had a bit of a rocky time there. It seems to be a stadium that a lot of clubs go to and don't find it easy to play there. And Villa, we did for a while, but then obviously second half they came at us. And that's credit to them. But also, how did you feel when right at the end of the game, Villa of old? I said, we keep saying this term over and over again under Unai Emery. The Villa of old would have done this in a negative way. The Villa of now under Unai Emery don't fold. They don't concede the third goal to lose. And instead, we somehow go and find a way of winning, which is what you traditionally associate with, the Ferguson era Man United or Klopp's Liverpool got, finding those late winners. And so how did you feel when Dean got that winner? And did you see it coming as well?
I mean, how did I feel? Absolutely ecstatic. It's one of the most wildest because it's a very compact away end. So I don't actually know where I ended up, but it certainly wasn't where I started when the ball came in. So it was absolutely wild, and the euphoria in there, it was a special moment. I think one of the best celebrations we've had in a long time, just because of how frustrated we all were after being 2-0 up. And I think that you really hit the nail on the head. 2-0 up, it's gone to 2-2. We've had it happen at Old Trafford already this season. Typical Villa. We're gonna, big weekend. There was a lot of chat before this weekend that Man United had their game against Man City, Villa had against Luton. We could really open this massive gap by come this time. This is what we were expecting. And then 2-0 down, so, or 2-0 up, sorry, now 2-2. Thinking, oh, here we go again. I didn't see it coming. And what I would say, as I mentioned earlier, it did feel like 2-2, they then changed their mentality. So at 2-0 down, they had nothing to lose, right? They'd lost the game. 2-2, they had something to cling on to. A point, Forest had just lost in the 97th minute earlier in the day. So a point was a good result for them. And you could tell that they maybe started to shift back. So we got a little bit more of the ball, but we hadn't been peppering their goal by any sense of the imagination. It was probably our first chance. Lovely cross.
Yeah,
And
Diaby's
I mean, when you
beautiful.
see Luka Dina running onto the ball, I mean, it all happens so quickly. You're not fully confident of what could happen. I mean, again, another very solid player for Villa, but not one that, if it'd been Moreno, probably would have been a lot more confident because we've seen it a few times from him. But yeah, it was just a fan. It's upon reflection, as a fan, it's the perfect way to win a football game. Be
It
2-0
is,
up
yeah.
and cruising, and have that enjoyable half-time experience, have it taken away from you, get really frustrated, and then just ping a last-minute winner so you can give it back to their fans. So, in terms of if you were to write that Hollywood script style, how to win a football game, last-minute winner away from home after being comfortable is not far off the perfect sort of win.
Yeah.
I think you'll take a lot if we'd won 2-0, interestingly. The euphoria, the feel-good factor probably isn't there as much as it is now. So yeah, it was a really special day, special one of those days where you've actually ended up watching countless YouTube videos, you've ended up watching countless Match of the Day highlights, just because you just want to relive it. It was really special, and now it's just so exciting, Frankie, to be a Villa fan at this moment
It's
in time.
mad,
This
isn't it?
next stretch of four games is why we are football fans. If you can't be excited about these next three or four games, you've got no hope. It's just so good.
Yeah, when it flashed up on my phone that it'd gone to Luton 2-2, I was just staring off bleakly into the distance. People at the wedding probably thinking, like, what has happened to this man? And then when it flashed up, it was 3-2. I very nearly went and grabbed the microphone off the best man during his speech to announce what had happened and tell everybody a 10-hour lecture about what makes Unai Emery so brilliant and Aston Villa is so fun to support right now. Which would have been funny because the groom was actually a Blues fan who's marrying a Villa fan. So, yeah, they would have enjoyed
Well,
that.
they had a last-minute defeat on the day, so that feel was absolutely perfect. So you perhaps were in an even better position, but that it was quite a big because underneath at the away end, there's just a tiny little bar, and they had Soccer Saturday on, and when Blues let in the last-minute goal just before we went up to our seats, that probably set the atmosphere off another level as well.
I was just like, if oh that it ever it's just comical at this point with Blues, but yeah, There was one player I did want to ask you about, Morgan Rogers. He came on, obviously. Jacob Ramsey, a bit worrying about what's going on with that, with his injury. But with Rogers, you know, I saw in the highlights he created one very good chance, which was brilliantly saved from the Luton keeper. But what did you think of him?
So, interesting. So, I think, firstly, hopefully, JJ isn't too long-term injury. Apparently, left the ground in a boot. And I think he's really struggled with... He hasn't struggled to get back to fitness. He struggled to get back to match fitness. So, yeah. And I found in the last two games, the pass to Louise, I thought, was exceptional for the Forest goal. And he looked good again before he went off injured. So, yeah, fingers crossed he's not too long-term and maybe a couple of games at max. Morgan Rogers, really interesting game. So he subbed on in about the 25th minute and got subbed off again in the 75th minute, or roughly we made four changes after it went down to two. He looked good. He looked good from an attacking perspective. He wanted the ball, which is always good to see. Beat a few men. He had a fantastic curling effort going into the top corner, which was excellently saved. Also set up Watkins for another chance. And he's playing the middle. Really wanted the ball. Not as... When you see JJ pick up the ball, it just feels like, how on earth has he got that much space when JJ picks up, turns and goes? It's almost like, how on earth has he not been marked? So not the similar sort of physique and running like that, but he was always in the pocket, always wanting the ball and linking up the play really well. But it did feel like defensively, it was a huge gap. And Unai has sort of come out and said as much. And he came out and said, no issue with him coming on and coming off. And he was applauding the fans afterwards. There was absolutely no sign of any disrespect from Rogers at all. He ran off, took the decision absolutely fine and was in front of the fans after the game. So certainly no animosity from Rogers about being taken off after he'd been brought on. But it did felt with him and Moreno were a weak sort of pairing, probably never played before. Yeah. Surprised actually when JJ got injured that they brought Rogers on. You're looking at the bench, Zaniola was on the bench, Diaby was on the bench, and maybe even Tim was on the bench as well to potentially have moved McGinn forward. So it wouldn't have been my first choice. So I think he got a lot of confidence from being thrown in. And he didn't just, like I said, not getting overexcited, I didn't see a player that was terrible, didn't see a player that was fantastic, but it felt like he got involved and was a key part of the game. But that when they started turning the screw, it did feel like it was too easy to get beyond him and just sort of one-on-one and almost two-on-one against Moreno, which is why the change happened. Yeah. So it could be interesting though, Frankie. I don't know what your thoughts are with, if assuming JJ's out for the Ajax game, I don't know who's going to start ahead of him, but Rogers came on, so maybe he's one of the front runners, but that's not what I would have thought a week ago.
Yeah, do you know, I've come to the conclusion with Zaniolo that I think he's a right midfielder. And at the moment, we're so stacked in that position with Bailey and playing like one of the best players on the planet. And Moussa Diaby himself, a fantastic player who, you know, is still, I think, coming to terms with the Premier League. But I'm absolutely convinced still, you know, in a year's time, we'll all be looking at him thinking he's incredible. Zaniolo, I think his best performances we've seen in glimpses have tended to be when he's on the right, and that's where he says himself is his best position. And when I've seen him play centrally back to goal or on the left, I just don't feel as convinced whenever I've seen him play on the right. Because I don't know what it is. I think Zaniolo has a tendency to sort of slow the pace a little bit, particularly in the centre. So I think Rogers, you know, When I looked at him and read about him, watched prep, I thought he sounded a bit like Jacob Ramsey. I thought he sounded like his best position was sort of where Ramsey plays. And so the two of them, kind of like Diaby and Bailey on the right, those two competing in the middle with Rogers sort of coming to terms with the Premier League. I think I wouldn't be massively surprised if Rogers does actually end up starting there in the next few games. But again, like I say, you know, him and Moreno don't really have much of an understanding yet. And it's a big call for Emery that, because I don't know, I don't want to move Tielemans from that second striker role back to the left, and just working through these injuries is a real headache, isn't it? But you know, we talk about the games coming up, massive games coming. I'm assuming you're going, Webbo.
Yeah,
Ajax away and Spurs at home. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about Spurs in a minute. Start on Ajax, I guess. How do you think we approach that with such a big game of Spurs coming up? How do we approach the Ajax game?
So I think actually the results that we've had should, in my opinion, prioritise the Ajax game. So I think it would. He, I think he does feel like Unai wants to win this tournament. I think qualifying for Europe, as I say, it's a given. We're not. We could still finish fifth, sixth. I'd be surprised if we finish below sixth now, which is a fantastic effort. I think you approach Ajax going to try and get ahead of the tie. I think it's going to be. It's the hardest draw I think we could have had.
Yeah.
It is a really tough game, and they have turned their season around. Like they're fifth in the league now, they are sort of getting. They were sort of flirting with relegation at one point this season, but they have turned it around. 1-2-0 at the weekend, so they're a very, very good side. And I have a feeling the I can't wait to get there. I have a feeling the atmosphere is going to be a little bit special on Thursday night. So
Yeah.
I. So when we go back to that JJ injury. I mean, if it's just a knock and he can play, great. But assuming you have to make a start, I would be bringing Powell back into the team. He was on the bench against Luton. So I would like to, as good as Longley's been, I'd be playing Cash, Konsa, Powell, and I'd bring in Digne for this one. I think Moreno, I think Digne is still slightly stronger than Moreno defensively. And I think they play, like I say, certainly this weekend they played three at the back with wing back, so that's where they really go for us. So I think if you just have a little bit more sturdy left back in Digne, he can still obviously go forward as well. That would be how I would approach it. I'd be surprised if he did it, but I personally would be looking to start Tim ahead of JJ if he's not fit, and
Okay.
then just moving McGinn further forward like he has done previously, and then just having an additional defensive midfielder. I think if you were to play Diaby, Bailey, and Watkins against them, it could become a little bit back and forth. And I don't know, just don't, I would rather us be trying to be a little bit more controlled and just try and control the game, get hopefully one or two goals, and just be ahead or at least level, bringing them back to Villa Park. So that is how I would approach the game. But I don't know how fit Pau Torres is or anything like that. But yeah, that's for me, would for me personally, it's the bigger game out of the for
Okay.
me to get through to the quarterfinals is bigger than just beating Spurs. For me, that should be the priority. So you just have to make sure you're ahead of the tide, bringing them back to Villa Park.
Yeah, and we want to get that those differentials, don't we, for because we want fifth place to be Champions League this season. And if your English teams keep getting on
Yeah.
in Europe, who are running the Conference League could end up actually being extremely
Now we
useful.
may have to win the Conference League in order to get in the Champions League. Like
you
in terms
imagine?
of
Can you imagine?
the points things, if Villa win this one, they get fifth and it's Champions League, etc. So who knows how it could pan out.
It's very fascinating in that way. But yeah, I mean, so. Yeah, Ajax is going to be. I think the atmosphere away is going to be very big for that one, and I kind of feel like Premier League clubs a little bit in Europe at the moment probably feel a little bit like the sort of villainous wrestlers in WWE. You know, like the ones that kind of like they come in, they've got the they're the, you, I think you probably see Premier League clubs now as the moneyed
Yeah.
clubs. It's where all the power is at the moment, or a lot of the power within Europe is in the Premier League. So I think it's probably one where you want to beat them.
Oh,
So I'm a
absolutely. And with the certainly the England, when the Premier League teams come, it brings an extra the amount of TV cameras that follow the Premier League
Yeah.
means that those individual players one feel like if you're at an Ajax at this moment in time, you're fifth in the league, there are step up you can take, and coming to the Premier League is a financial step up to anybody in the Dutch league. So they will know that there's an opportunity to shine. If you have two good games against Villa on the Premier League platform, if it's an opportunity for you to get your own individual move. And then from a fan's perspective, the British teams have still got this long history in that is the scalp. If you can beat a British team, that's the team you want to beat every time you do, not Villa or anything like that. It's there's always we carry that extra burden as we when we travel in Europe. Any English team does, everybody wants to beat an English team because it just has far more kudos to it and all this sort of stuff. And you're absolutely right, they need something, Ajax, to cling on to this season. It's been a like they've had people smashing up their doors this season. They've had protests. They've had managerial changes. They need a bright spark. Beating Villa over two legs would be that spark for them this season. That they can say that the season has still potentially been a successful one based on that. So it's going to be so hard, Frankie. And then sandwiched between that, you've got closest rivals for a Champions League place in the league. So Spurs must be absolutely delighted that we're playing Ajax this week.
I'd say so. I think the Spurs game just looms there, doesn't it? Like the sort of moon in the night sky. It's kind of, you just can't not look at it and think it's a big one. It's a big, big game. I have no idea how it's going to go. Or I sort of could see it being 5-4 either way. Basketball game. Both teams can see lots of goals. Both seem to just be able to score a lot. I think for me, the player that worries me the most is actually James Maddison. Son is just a magnificent, magnificent player. But Maddison, there's just something about him whenever he's played us, or a lot of the times he's played us, where I've always felt he just has a way of finding space and pulling out passes from deep that is really hard to stop.
I think similar to what we said with JJ, he's come back from a foot injury and he's just starting to warm up. So I don't think he's been truly match fit, and they get a lot. I don't know if I'll never know from a footballer's perspective, but they get a lot of breaks in between games. I don't know if that's good for the likes of James Maddison or if he would prefer more game time. I've no idea, but it just feels like there's some. I think that's a fair worry. Are you worried about them attacking Matty Cash, as their social media should suggest from their last game? Apparently, they're out to kill Matty Cash, so that's going to be an interesting one on Sunday.
I saw this. It just sounds like a bunch of crybabies. It was a bad foul, but it wasn't like. It wasn't. I didn't think it was like a super cynical one, or like. Yeah. And you know what are they talking about when Romero is pulling out some of the worst fouls you've ever seen in your life? Like when he got sent off against Chelsea, that was an absolutely horrendous red card he got.
I am quite critical of Villa fans every now and again. However, when I see Spurs fans reacting like that, I actually our fans are not that stupid. Can you imagine if our fans had reacted about this from Ben Mee, who has tried to take out the majority of our squad for the last 18 months, or Tarkowski, who see like anybody who's been managed by Sean Dyche has seemingly tried to kill a Villa attacker at some point over the last 18 months. I think we'd be all outside their houses burning effigies of Ben Mee and James Tarkowski if we had the Spurs attitude. So but it's an interesting one as I'd have no idea if Unai will be aware of this, if it's going to affect the players, but you are going to have a little bit of rotation over the next few weeks. So actually, you could move Konsa to right back against Spurs and bring Longley back.
Yeah.
If it's a genuine, they're going to be so up for this, let's just take the sting out of it. I've no idea if managers take any sense, wouldn't have a clue, but it might be something that he is aware of. And if you worry that Cash could, because I do actually, if I was to be critical of Cash, I could actually, if you were the opposition manager, it just seemed the sort of player that you could wind up.
Like, yes.
Sent off for us, but do you know what I mean? He just has that petulance about him.
Mm.
And you think if you kept getting into him, he'd do something silly. I mean, he's probably a bit harsh because I don't think he's got sent off for Villa at all, but he just has that sort of aura around him. So, don't know. Could be an interesting one come Sunday.
Yeah, it's definitely, like I said, I just know that for the neutrals, this is going to be a very entertaining game. I think for us, for those fans, it's going to be probably heart in mouths a lot of the time.
I mean, when Sky do Super Sundays and it starts off with Burnley v Bournemouth, you sort of think, come on, let's re-advertise this. But on Sunday, we've got Villa Spurs followed by Liverpool Man City. I mean,
that's a good day in the pub, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll say it's one of those where you almost wish you weren't a fan going to one of the games and you could just sit back. You'd be an Arsenal fan, be a dream day, right? Just sit back, see hopefully a lot of your, see Tottenham lose would be good for them, see Liverpool, Man City drop points and just sit back and relax and enjoy it.
Yeah, completely. I'm very excited for it. You know, the next few fixtures, Ajax away, Spurs at home, Ajax at home, West Ham away, Wolves home and City away. I mean, that's a tough run, but as Unai Emery says, we're in no excuses culture.
Yeah.
Got to get
this
the job
done. This is what it was all about. When we beat Brighton, last game of the season, everyone was going mad and we had all those fans out before that because this is what we want. We talk about Aston Villa being this big club. I know it's only the third tier of Europe, but Ajax feels like an absolute proper European night. And if you want to progress this club, if you want to keep hold of players and if you want to progress, these are the type of run of fixtures you've got to be offering players that come to your club.
Yeah.
Because we won't go down FFP route, but hopefully in the summer we'll be signing players. why wouldn't you want to play for Aston Villa right now? We're hopefully going to be in the top tier of the European football. If not, we'll definitely be in the Europa League, and we're battling on all fronts. So, yeah, it's just an exciting time for the club. And yeah, by the time I've left the Solar Stadium, that is West Ham in a couple of weeks' time, if we could have just qualified for the quarterfinals, four extra league points, I can go into the international break a very happy man.
Yeah, 100%. I'd just get to that international break and
Yeah.
see how we are then.
Hopefully nobody gets called up to international duty. It's probably the only time. Usually I want all our players to be represented, I know. But a current man, I hope Southgate does the right thing. Drop Watkins, he drops Conte, just don't take any of them.
Let us
Give
let
them a
the
week. You
this is the first time I've been like, no, Southgate, actually don't pick Villa
do
players. I will
you.
cheer you for this. I
This
will
will be the
not get
first
my
time he'll pick them all. But what are you deciding? He just
yeah.
like a reverse hatred of Villa. He'll pick
He
all our players and get them injured.
even tries to call up Matty Cash because he's forgotten he plays for Poland, you know.
Yeah.
Webbo, great to chat to you as always. What a time to support the Villa. Obviously, we're both London Lions. How can we get involved?
Yeah, we're across all social media platforms. Got a pub that we watch all the games on. The big gathering in the Tap Inn in by Elephant and Castle for the Ajax game this week. So if you are unable to get over to Amsterdam and you're in London, the pub in the Elephant and Castle, the Tap. Or the Yak Bar, as I think it's officially called these days. That will be showing again, and there'll be lots of Villa fans in there. So it'd be great to have people down.
Absolutely. Well, perfect stuff, Webbo. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I've been your host, Frankie Maguire. We're back later this week with George for a special episode. Webbo, thanks again for coming on.
Cheers, mate.
And goodbye from me. We'll be back again soon. But until then, come on, Super Aston Villa.